and from beyond. Listen, all you desire to be heard. Welcome to Spider-Man and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Welcome to Prattle World. I am your host, the ever amazing, ever spectacular Spider Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. Welcome. I know it's been a bit of a wait, but finally, this is it. I'm finally doing my very own podcast. It took a bit of preparation, a bit of time. I've also been busy doing other stuff. But yeah, I'm really, really excited, really happy about this. I think we're going to have a lot of fun and hopefully we'll all learn something as well. All right, so without further ado, I'd like to start off with my very first segment on my very first show called Secret Boar Journal.
Dear Secret Boar Journal.
So yeah, I've not been doing that much really in regards to my geeky, nerdy side of my life. Well, I mean, you can consider it geeky or nerdy. It's basically I've been doing a play called Whittingham, and basically it's a real life story of people in a mental health asylum in Preston around the kind of First World War, and I play a mentally ill actor. So not actually much acting going on there, pretty much already what I am. So yeah, it was fun. It was great to work with some young students from my old uni that I'd never worked with before or spent time with. So we all got on really well. I was the oldest one there, pretty much, I think, possibly. But it was nice. It was a nice feeling. I got directed by my old tutor, and we just had a ball. Again, it was hard work, and it was quite a serious piece. But I tended to bring in the comedy. I think that's why they had me. I basically, my character could only speak in Shakespearean verse, so there's lots of these and thous, and you know, just say things at random times that had nothing to do with anything else. So kind of brought a bit of levity to it. But obviously, there's sensitivity of playing a role like that and a bit of research that goes into it, because obviously they're real people and they have real issues, you know. But it was a really good subject, and it shows, you know, it's 100 years since the First World War, and it really showed how far we've come in regards to mental health and stigmas, and how far we haven't, unfortunately. So yeah, some very weird practices and things they thought works, some weird stuff like measuring, they would just measure everything for some reason. That seemed to be the main source of finding out if people were mentally ill or if they had some deficiencies. And we looked through the archives at Preston to kind of look at the history of the characters. We saw photos and various other things as well. And it was really sad that, you know, a lot of the girls and the women that were in there for, you know, being a teenager, you know, being a stroppy teenager, or, you know, there was even somebody in there for eccentricity. So I definitely would have been in a mental asylum, clearly. But yeah, it was really fun, and it kind of got my theatre nerd geek side active again, which doesn't happen as often as I would like, again, in regards to money and funds. But I got to spend some time with my family as well, and my little nephew Cohen, who is a wonderful, wonderful human being. And so yeah, it was really fun. So in the next week or so, I'll be doing some more, getting back to normal, kind of doing stuff that I'm kind of a bit more into in regards to kind of movies and TV and comics and stuff, which is what this podcast is all about. So I think that's the end of that section. Yeah, I think we'll call it a day there. So let's move on to the next section, which is Secret Boar Stories.
Secret Boar Stories.
Okay, so basically, Secret Boar Stories is basically a top five stories. So it could be films, books, you name it. So I'd basically just pick a top five and list them. No real order to these, just basically five decent things. I'm on Twitter, believe it or not, and a couple of people who followed me, I think it was the at the good bad and the Spidey, I believe, is the handle for that person. And at Spidey Reader, I'm going to say, I think that's correct. And they basically reminded me that one of my favorite iterations of Spider-Man was actually 10 years old. And that's a lot of people probably didn't hear about this cartoon show when it came out. But it is the Spectacular Spider-Man, starring Josh Keaton, Clancy Brown, John DiMaggio. The list goes on. And it's just possibly the closest iteration to the original Stan Lee, Steve Ditko comic books back in the 60s. And also it's really close to the Ultimate Spider-Man comic book run, which is basically a more modern retelling of the story with some changes. So yeah, it basically marries those two things together and, you know, pulls from all the different kind of Spider-Man lore that has been throughout history, throughout his, what we're talking about, 60 years, 70, 50 years. Yeah, like 50 years or so that's gone on. And it's just phenomenal. The animation style took a while to get used to. They have these really weird kind of large eyes. But the action's great, the romance, the day-to-day troubles and struggles Spider-Man has, also, you know, just fighting villains mostly, you know, what he does, but they kind of mix it all together, and they do a lot of original stuff. It's not just all, you know, rehashes of like the 90s Spider-Man cartoon or something like that. You know, it'll defeat these villains in very different ways from what you've seen, but there's still a familiarity and a fun. I highly recommend if you've seen Spider-Man Homecoming or any of the MCU films with Spider-Man. I think this is a really good show to kind of jump in because it's very much on that same sort of tone, a similar tone to the films with Tom Holland. So I highly recommend it. So let's start with the first episode. I know I'm trying to be aware of the time. I don't want to go over too long. So the first episode is called Natural Selection. Now, all the episodes are actually subjects you would learn in high school, which I think is quite clever as well. And both two seasons follow a full year. Unfortunately, it was only two. I really would have liked a third one, but they cancelled it for a different show, which I didn't care for particularly. I did watch it, but it was not as good, unfortunately. Natural Selection. So this episode features Kurt Connors, you may be familiar with from the Amazing Spider-Man film. And yes, he's been experimenting on himself with an experimental lizard formula. And this grows back his missing arm. I don't think we learn how he loses his arm. I guess it doesn't really matter, does it? But he basically grows it back. Unfortunately, there are side effects and he is starting to become a giant reptile, which Stan Lee would just call the lizard, which is a good enough name. it's quite violent as well, and a little dark this episode. The lizard actually, you know, goes to bite people's heads off. You know, it's the way it's treated is very much like The Fly, the Jeff Goldblum film, the David Cronenberg film. It's very much like a body horror, and you know the lizard goes to bite off people's heads in this. You know, and Spidey just saves them at the last possible moment. It's genuinely and quite scary as a kid's episode. You know, very much like the old animated Batman shows. They were all quite dark and serious. So this very very much in the same kind of tone. And it's really good because I think the best Spider-Man stories are where Peter and Spider-Man's lives collide, and Peter basically has to make money for Aunt May at this moment in time, so he has to take photos. But he also has to go away and become Spider-Man, and everyone's working towards this lizard cure, and he goes to take photos, and he doesn't have a decent explanation. And at the end of the episode, he ends up being fired from his intern job, or whatever they call it, kind of placement, if you will, at the Connors lab. It's quite a good one. At the end of the episode, he also has they basically create a gene cleanser, which is kind of the cure to the lizard's predicament, or to Kurt Connors' predicament, and he takes it home because it can strip anybody of superpower, non-human DNA, I think they say in the episode. So he takes it home and considers taking it because it just because Spider-Man's given him all these problems. You know, it's never helped him in any way. But obviously, he remembers with great power comes great responsibility, as he always does. But yeah, and I really like the interpretation of the lizard in this. Like the first episode of the 90s show, which really got me into Spider-Man, was the lizard. And it was, again, that one was quite scary as well. It's like, for a kid anyway, for a kid show. And but the only thing that I think is a little bit ridiculous is when the lizard talks. It's always a little bit weird for me. You know, I obviously you have to suspend your disbelief. There's, you know, green aliens and, you know, purple aliens, you know, all around the MCU, and, you know, crazier things than a talking lizard, I'm sure. But I don't know, it always struck me as a bit odd to see a giant talking lizard. But yeah, I highly recommend that episode. That is at the end. They kind of do three episode arcs in the series. So that is kind of the end of the first arc. But again, really good, great introduction to the lizard and those characters as well. And yeah, highly recommend it. Second episode is The Invisible Hand, which basically is the end of the arc, the second arc in the first series. Now, as a character called the Big Man of Crime, this shadowy kind of crime boss, kind of mob boss, and he's been creating various supervillains like Sandman and various other different, and the Shocker, in the previous episodes to distract Spider-Man so he could still make money. So the small crimes aren't, you know, Spider-Man isn't looking at the small crimes. So yeah, he basically creates the Rhino in this episode. From a hood that Spider usually trounced called Alex O'Hearn. Yes, it's a horrible horn pun, I know. So basically he does that, and the Rhino gets to it, doesn't waste any time, and he goes straight to the Daily Bugle because he knows Peter Parker's been taking photos of Spider-Man. Now he gets there, and it's really odd because you never really see the Rhino somewhere, like, because they go to the top floor of the building is where the Bugle is. So he gets in the elevator and this guy's like, "Where are you going, top floor?" And the Rhino's like, "You're not Peter Parker, are you?" And he's like, "No, I don't know him." So it's this absolutely ridiculously huge character in this tiny elevator. It's great. He gets up there and JJ is obviously JJ. J. Jonah Jameson, you know, the head of the Daily Bugle, the editor-in-chief, and he goes straight to him and tries to kick him out, and then the Rhino threatens him, and I think J. Jonah Jameson is one of the best characters ever created, to be honest. I think he's well-rounded, he's funny, he's interesting, he could be villainous, you could play him on so many different levels, it all works. And here you see kind of JJ, it's similar to the scene in the first Spider-Man movie where the Green Goblin breaks in and asks who takes the pictures of Spider-Man. And basically JJ's like, I don't know who it is. He sends his stuff in the mail. So, and even Peter's there in the scene in both of those. So I think it's a nice little nod to that great film. And it's good to see JJ not being, you know, he could have easily sold Peter out. He could have, you know, gone, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's been like physically manhandled, choked and threatened, but he doesn't, because he's a deep down, very, very, very deep down, he is a good man. And that's why I love that character so much. Another really, really interesting thing in Peter Parker's life is the problem's coming up. So he wants a date and he is struggling, much like myself. I can relate. Trying to find dates for weddings and stuff isn't always successful for myself. So that's cool. And he's trying to go out with Betty Brant, who is a little bit older. So I think she's like 19. I think he's about 15, 16, I think, at this point. So it's a little bit weird. And Aunt May gets wind of this and she's not cool with it. So she comes to the Daily Bugle. Same time the Rhino turns up and basically says to Betty Brant, "You're too old, you can't be going out with a 15-year-old boy," which I guess back in the 60s that is what happened in the comics. That is exactly what happened. And but yeah, it's weird. I think in a modern context it's a bit odd, you know, older people, like much older people going out with much younger people, it's a bit weird. I know in, you know, I don't know how it is in America, but in England that would be a bit odd for an 18, 19-year-old to be going out with a 15, 16-year-old, I think. Even if it is, but fair enough, you know. Betty Brant is a beautiful, beautiful woman, so I don't blame him. Now, at the end of the episode, we get the reveal of the big man of crime. Now, it's probably not who you're thinking, which is kind of a nice bait and switch, actually, because there's a character that, after the whole incident with the rhino, after he's defeated by Spidey, Spidey goes back and asks about the big man of crime and asks who this guy is. And he's actually speaking to Frederick Foswell. And in the original comics, Frederick Foswell was the big man of crime, and he wore this big, overly large suit to make sure people didn't recognize him. He's a pretty cool character, but they don't go too deep with him in this episode. I think it's just kind of a cameo. But the star of this episode really has to be Clancy Brown, who is one of my favorite actors, voice actors, performers. And he's pulling double duty as the Rhino, but he also plays George Stacy, so Captain Stacy and Gwen Stacy's dad. And he's just phenomenal. He's such a talented voice actor that you just can't tell the difference between him and, the Rhino, basically, the George Stacy character, the Rhino. He's so talented. He can differentiate his voice so much. And, you know, he's Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob, you know, he's Lex Luthor in the, Justice League animated, you know, all the kind of DC animated universe stuff with Bruce Timm and Paul Dini. He's just a phenomenal performer. The next one is Intervention. Now, basically, in the previous episode, Spidey has slept through a fight with the entire Sinister Six, and his black alien suit has taken him for a test drive, basically. Unfortunately, and he defeats them, you know, while he's sleeping, which is pretty cool. That's a great episode in itself. So I definitely watch that, and it's part of this arc as well. But he also sleeps through Aunt May going into the hospital. She has a heart attack during the attack on Spidey, and she has to go into hospital, but they can't get hold of Peter because he's basically sleeping through everything because he's so exhausted when the suit takes him out, unbeknownst to himself. And once he realizes what's happened, all the negative kind of emotions come out and kind of fuel the suit's power, and it has more of a controlling effect. And, you know, all his friends are there and they want to help, you know, they want to see what they can do. And he's like, I need money to pay for the bills for Aunt May, and none of you are going to help me. You can't help me. So, you know, buzz off, basically, is what he says. And then Flash Thompson, of all people, who's quite a fairly vicious bully in this interpretation, basically calls him out on it and says, you've been a dick, basically, to your friends. And he was like, okay, now I realize there's something wrong with me. And he realizes it is the suit and goes to the famous church and tries to remove it. And again, what I was saying earlier about these, like, you could rehash the, you know, the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, the Alien costume saga, I think it was called, three-parter in the 90s. You could easily just rehash that and, you know, defeat the symbiote with sound and stuff. But basically the symbiote cocoons him. He fails to kill it with sound, cocoons him, and basically starts showing him his past. And you get to see Spidey's origin. Now, I know in the movies we see it over and over again, Spidey's origin, and we're sick of it. But like this show, and the 90s show, it doesn't start with the origin. You know, they don't just go, oh, this is the origin. They get on with it. They crack on with the show and why it's enjoyable. I like it when they do come back to it, because it's an important lesson, for people and for Spidey to remember, to keep remembering. It's really good. And he gets to talk to Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben, the symbiote stirs up Uncle Ben's memory and kind of remembers why he's become Spider-Man and who he is and all the good he's done, while the symbiote is trying to basically convince Spider-Man to cement their bond and then get everything they ever wanted. But these memories that he stirred up, Uncle Ben, you know, starts basically working against the symbiote because that's who Uncle Ben is. And it's really fun. And they take the best elements from the movies, other cartoons, other comics, and kind of slam them all together. And it's really nice. And it's mostly in kind of black and white as well, which kind of gives it this kind of universal monsters horror feel to it, which is really, really nice. And we also get Ed Asner returns and Jim Cummings. Ed Asner, you'll know, is trying to think what he's Santa in Elf is probably what you've seen him in, and Jim Cummings, who's the immortal Winnie the Pooh for all of time, and in the most recent Christopher Robin movie, they come back. They were in the 90s as the Shocker and J. Jonah Jameson, so it was really nice to have them back and kind of brought up a few feels for me. So that was really, really cool. But yeah, it kind of basically the memory of all his friends and the reasons why he's Spider-Man helps him starve out the symbiote of those negative emotions and just has pure, you know, love in his heart and stuff. And it is, yeah, you could say it is a little bit cheesy, but I think they did it in such a way that it works. And I was happy with that. And I think it's a really enjoyable episode. Next one is, we're on season two now, so we've got the last two left, and this one introduces basically the finale of Spider-Man has Eddie Brock becoming Venom and Spider-Man defeating Venom, and also he realizes his feelings for Gwen Stacy and they share a kiss. So he's coming back off that, and he's basically searching for Brock because he's disappeared. He doesn't know where he's gone, and he doesn't trigger his spider sense, so he's a bit worried about the possibility of him and Venom coming back. But he's also figuring out how to navigate his personal relationship with Gwen. What does it mean? Does, you know, all that sort of stuff. All the while, he's been confronted by a sorcerer by the name of Mysterio. So he basically, this version of Mysterio is a little bit, I like a different spin on our character. So, like Spider-Man 2, Mysterio was pretending to be an alien in the Spider-Man 2 video game. He was pretending to be an alien who was invading and used all these kind of special effects and wizardry tricks and what have you, and illusions to convince Spider-Man of that. I think in the 90s show, he was supposed to be, and in the original comic, he was going to be a new hero, and he was framing Spider-Man for various crimes by impersonating him. But yeah, so I like that he basically comes in and it's kind of like a jokey Doctor Strange. He speaks loads of Latin and he's very anti-technology. So it's like, I'm going to, he has this kind of voice where it's like, oh, I think it's Xander Berkeley who plays him. He was in Terminator 2. I think he was the adopted dad of John Connor in Terminator 2 Judgment Day. He's the one who gets the milk carton and the spike in the head, which is a brilliant moment in that film. So yeah, he plays this kind of, you know, he keeps like spouting Latin and things like that. And obviously, as the episode progresses, basically we find out that he's not all that he seems, obviously. Master of illusion and all that. So yeah, and this is a really good episode because I always like when Spider-Man has to deal with regular problems, regular issues, you know, paying bills and things like that. And since the weather's turned cold and he became Spider-Man in the summer, he's dealing with having to deal with freezing cold temperatures in a skin-tight suit. And, you know, I've been to many a Comic-Con in a skin-tight suit. And yeah, there's a definite shrinkage going on most of the time. So yeah, also another great thing is it's got a Stan Lee cameo. So you know, anything with a Stan Lee cameo is instantly amazing. So wonderful stuff. So yeah, I'm just my phone's buzzing at me. All of a sudden, I'm very popular, which is unusual. So our last episode is opening night. So basically, Spider-Man gets hired to test out the security on the Vault, which is a supervillain, Supermax prison. So he's hired by, I think it's Norman Osborn, George Stacy, and Jonah's there because he wants to see him not escape from the prison and basically show him up. Meanwhile, at Midtown High, they are about to perform A Midsummer Night's Dream. So most of the supporting cast are in the cast of Midsummer Night's Dream. And one is suspiciously missing, and that's Harry Osborn, who is going to be playing Puck, that mischievous sprite. However, there is a mischievous sprite that turns up at the prison and lets everybody out, and it's the Green Goblin. So he releases all the prisoners, and Spidey has to deal with that. Unbeknownst to him, the Black Cat is breaking into the prison. for an unknown reason. But truth be told, basically, she is in there to release her dad, who was a famous cat burglar. And that is actually goes along with her first comic book appearance as well, is she basically was trying to break her dad out of prison. But yeah, so this is a great episode because, it kind of takes us a little bit back to the origin stories. It's another kind of new spin on it. Which I wasn't against either. It wasn't bad. So like in Spider-Man 3, when the Sandman turns out to be Uncle Ben's killer, sort of worked, sort of didn't. He was the best character in that film. There's a lot wrong with that film, as I'm sure you've seen with the emo Peter, the dancing Venom. The list goes on. But this, so what they do is they take an obscure early 60s Spider-Man villain, make him Black Cat's dad, but also make him Uncle Ben's murderer, which basically Black Cat and Spidey have a whole spat about this because he's not, you know, Black Cat's asking him to look the other way. And he said, I won't ever look the other way again because, you know, after what this man did. So it's a really, it's action packed. It's fun. I always like a good, kind of prison escape episode. And that is basically, you know, one of the best in the show, the whole show. It's so much fun. You've got Molten Man in there. You've got the Enforcers. You've got the Rhino, Mysterio. Well, not Mysterio, but, Robot Mysterio. And they're all there and all trying to stop Spidey. And, you know, you've got this other inner issue he's having as well, but also all the while through this, which is really a really cool device actually, is we're seeing the performance of Midsummer Night's Dream. Can't fucking say things today. Midsummer Night's Dream. So basically, they're quoting lines from it and various other things, and which kind of they kind of links in. They kind of ever so subtly, like, you know, ill met by moonlight. You know, they'll see all the. This is when Spidey sees all the villains and things like that, which is really cool. And me being a bit of a theatre nerd, and my final performance at uni was A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I was Oberon, so I do have a bit of a soft spot for it in that regard as well. And it's really cool. It's a really good episode. But yeah, that is my top five Secret Ball stories. So yeah, so that was cool. So moving on to our next segment.
Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh, Sister Phoenix. Oh, I shake her, sing it. You must have tried.
Phoenix.
Okay, moving on. Okay, so the reason I put together this podcast was basically, well, I wanted to do one, first of all. And basically, I wanted to kind of do my own thing, do something I'm kind of interested in, and the kind of stuff I really, and I'm very fond of movies, and I'm very fond of comics. Mostly, I'm more into my genre stuff. So I'm more into kind of cult, you know, horror, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, that sort of stuff, crime stuff. You know, I'm not big on the kind of the Oscar-winning dramas and things like that. It's not really my, I like a niche. There's a niche there. And I've always really been into kind of cult movies. And I really wanted to kind of put that into Nerdified. We never really got the chance all the time. And I don't think that was necessarily what the show was about. So I thought I'd specify in that. And I've never really been one for, if someone tells me that they like something and they go on and on about it, or if something's popular, like Game of Thrones at the moment, I've still not seen a full series of Game of Thrones. I've seen a couple of episodes, I've enjoyed it, but I'm not really that much of a TV show guy. And the more you tell me how good it is, and the more the world tells me how good it is, and the you know, the internet, Facebook, you know, the more of that I have, the less I want to look at it or view it or watch it, you know. That's why, you know, I tend to read comics, or I'll tend to look at these cult films. So these, a lot of these films people will have never heard of, never seen, and these comics as well. That's why I wanted to bring that to a podcast, because there's a lot of great stuff out there that people just haven't heard of. yeah, be it comic books, you know, be it the death of Gene DeWolf in Spider-Man, or be it, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a kind of a cult film. I don't know, like maybe somebody hasn't seen Evil Dead 2 or something like that, or, you know, The Room, things like that. And I love them because, like, they're either really good or really shit, or they're so shit that they're actually good. So I wanted to look at stuff like that. And there's great international movies out there that people have never looked at as well. I'm going to look at stuff I haven't seen as well. I don't want to go over stuff that everybody's done a podcast on before and things like that. I want to do stuff that nobody's seen, nobody's done. I've done a fair bit of research into the subject itself. So I wanted to start with the Rocky Horror Picture Show, because that's one I've never seen. And again, it's one of those where everyone bangs on about it. Nah, 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 it's so good. Nah, nah, nah. It's a sweet transvestite. Yeah, 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 yeah. Great. But someone tells me, the less I... And I felt that if this show is going to be what it's going to be, I felt that it is a cult film, sure. Rocky Horror Picture Show is a cult film, definitely. However, I kind of think it's so popular, it's become quite mainstream. It's not really a cult film anymore. So I wanted to go for something a little bit different, sort of a similar vein, but something a bit more of something that people wouldn't have heard of or not experienced or not know about, but still in a similar vein. So I went with Phantom of the Paradise. So this is this is the IMDb synopsis. I'll just read this for you. A disfigured composer sells his soul for the woman he loves so that she will perform his music. However, an evil record tycoon betrays him and steals his music to open his rock palace, the Paradise. So yeah, I'm going to break it down into, I think, five categories. Yeah, kind of five categories, and then I'll give it an overall score, I think. We'll see if it's a secret ball or a secret score. So first of all, let's look at the story. So yeah, it's, I feel a lot with musical films that the stories aren't particularly strong. Because at the end of the day, it's about the music. So, you know, like Blues Brothers, you know, Tenacious D, Pick a Destiny. You know, I think a lot of kind of musicals and musical films are not that strong in the story department, necessarily in the character department. I think that comes through the music. That's the best bit for me, personally. The story is a bit... It does what it needs to do. It's very much smashing a lot of kind of gothic horror tales together. So you've got Phantom of the Opera, obviously. There's a bit of Faust in there, and various other kind of horror references with a kind of 70s kitsch music neon feel to it. It's kind of, I think the best word to describe it is kind of phantasmagorical is probably the best word, because it is very out there. It's very over the top. It's very unusual, but it is still very 70s as well, which is great. Like, I love a lot of the films from the 70s, and they have that unique feel to them. Like, again, some of my favourite comics are from the 70s, which is a very experimental period in time, I think, in regards to being creative. Basically, the main character of Winslow Leach, who is basically a, you know, kind of piano man. Sing us a song, you're the piano man. And he creates I think it's cantata. I don't know if that's the correct musical term they use. I think something like that. And basically it's a story. So it's kind of like a concept album, I think, is basically the best way to put it. And it's about Faust. So the idea of a young man selling his soul for eternal youth to the devil. And basically that plays a part in this. And a mysterious music producer by the name of Swan basically hears the music and goes, I'm having that. That'll be good. And I'll use that to open my new club, The Paradise. Weirdly, the opening for the film is done by Rod Serling of The Twilight Zone, his voiceovers are amazing anyway. It just felt a little bit out of place for me, tonally. I mean, again, they're still going for this gothic horror stuff, but it is, again, it's very campy as well, which is great, and I don't mind. But they just speak about Swan, the music producer, and they kind of big him up a bit more than, I don't know. I don't know if he needed that bigging up. I think him being mysterious enough was enough. But yeah, it's a great voiceover. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if it felt a little bit out of place for this particular, the tone of the film. Here's this. And then he steals the music, basically. Swan steals Winslow Leach's music. And then a few months later, Winslow's like, where's my money? Where's everything? And they're like, don't contact him, kick him out. So he gets kicked out. And then he finds his way to Swan's kind of bachelor pad. He's got all these women auditioning for the song, for the music. And Jessica Harper plays Phoenix, who is basically a songbird, if you will, in this. And she's auditioning, and he sees her, and he's like, oh yeah, that's a brilliant song. You're singing it so beautifully. Let's do it together. And they kind of harmonize and do all that. He kind of falls for her straight away, and she's very nice, and then he manages to sneak in. But it's kind of this whole film is basically, initially I wasn't that keen on it. I was a bit like, it's okay. But when I realized it was basically a satire about the music industry, that's when the whole movie clicked for me. I just went, this is brilliant. Because basically these girls are going to audition, but they're not actually auditioning. They're actually having to have sex with the music producers, which is very kind of prevalent with the whole Me Too thing. It's a bit uncomfortable, but it's played as uncomfortable. It's not played as like, oh yeah, this is a great thing. But then there's like soon after that, there's kind of this orgy thing going on, or all these girls are like, Swan wants us to do it to each other. And it's all kind of like, it's a bit of a jump from going from, you know, sexual assault-ish to, you know, to orgies. It's a little bit uncomfortable, but and it turns out the funny thing is that Winslow snuck in dressed as a woman to Swan's little soiree with the other women, and he basically says, get him out, get this guy out, takes him out, police plant drugs on him and get sent to prison. They remove his teeth for some reason while he's in prison, and give him metal ones. I don't know why. I think it's just the design of the Phantom later on. It's, you know, some reason for it, I guess, to give him metal teeth. I probably would have just maybe come up with something better, maybe knock them out and they've had to be replaced with metal or something. I don't know. He sees that Swan's about to open the paradise with his music, and he goes a bit apeshit. Manages to escape prison. He's a bit of a bumbling idiot at this point in the film. But he managed to escape prison. I can't remember how. I think he crawls out like a Andy Dufresne sewer pipe or something like that, kind of like Shawshank. He finds where they're producing the record of it, and tries to destroy it, and goes a bit mad, and then gets his head caught in this kind of record press, and it kind of scars him. And the club's about to open, so the paradise is about to open, and he basically becomes the Phantom, and attacks. I think he attacks. No, he sets a bomb. That's it. He sets a bomb and tries to kill everybody. And they're doing another bit of the satire, as most of the songs are kind of satires of, So you've got a Beach Boys-like song, you've got a kind of Grease kind of greasers kind of song as well, and various other bits and pieces. The music is great. The music is really good. Swan realizes who he is, and he can't speak, so he gives him this like electronic voice box and says, you're going to rewrite your music. And basically he says, oh no, only Phoenix can sing it. So he's like, I'll make sure Phoenix sings it, but you've got to lock yourself in here and rewrite the whole thing, because it is like, it feels like it's the greatest piece of music. And he gets him to sign a contract, which he doesn't really read, standard. I mean, who reads the terms and conditions on the Apple iPhone, do they? Nobody does that. So he doesn't read it, and he signs it away. Basically, he finds out that Phoenix isn't going to sing it. He's hired a great character called Beef, who's this kind of effeminate, flamboyant, kind of rock and roll diva. He's played by, I think it's Garrett McCarthy. Garrett, I'm just going to look it up. Wait for it. I'll look it up in a bit. No, he's amazing in the role. He's just silly, really over the top, character. And it's a real shame because he does get killed off, but he has to die in one of the best cinema deaths I've ever seen. The Phantom, once he's found out that Phoenix isn't going to sing any of the songs that he wrote, he grabs this like neon lightning bolt, is the best way I can describe it, and while Beef's singing the song, he hurls the neon lightning bolt at Beef, and it explodes, kills him, electrocutes him, and then you see in the kind of in the background of another shot, there's just a pile of flames, like a flaming pile. And then the next bit's really funny because Phoenix comes up and goes, "Is Beef?" And they're like, "Yeah, he's dead." And I was like, "He's clearly dead because there's a flaming body there. It's just like no one's putting it out or anything. It's just this flaming pile of ash." Hurling a neon lightning bolt has got to be one of the best deaths in cinema. It's during one of the music. Music songs. That's what we call them in real life. During one of the song, Beef's song, he's like doing this wail, but then obviously he gets the lightning bolt, wow, in the back. he's just doing this like rock and roll like scream, like wow. It's proper. I guess it's kind of a glam rock before there was kind of glam rock. It's kind of little Alice Cooper and kind of Bowie in there, I think, influencing his character and Beef's character. It's really, really interesting. But yeah, like, go back to the story. It's not the strongest, but it works, and it is a bit bizarre, and it's a bit weird, and it's a bit kooky. And I do think maybe they spent a bit too much time on the origin for the Phantom. And I don't think Phoenix doesn't know what's going on until very late on in the film. So she doesn't have much character because she doesn't know what's going on. She just thinks her dreams are coming true. She's becoming a star. She's singing, you know, she's going to have music deals and things like record deals and things like that. But she doesn't really get that. She doesn't get that much of a character. She is a phenomenal singer. I think it's Jessica Harper plays her. And she is a phenomenal singer. Beef was Gerrit Graham, actually. She's a phenomenal singer. She's also the star of... She's in Shock Treatment, I believe. That's one I haven't seen either, but that's definitely going on the list. And Suspiria, which is one, again, another one I need to watch. She's this cult actress keeps coming up. Pennies from Heaven, I think, as well. She's a phenomenal singer and does the best, kind of the best shoulder dancing, you know, aggressive, violent shoulder dancing I've ever seen in my life. But it's good. I don't know how to describe it. Maybe just watch the trailer. If you're not going to watch the film, watch the trailer and see it for yourself. It's quite... I think it is very 70s kind of kitsch, very kind of disco, I guess. But I'd never seen any dancing quite like it. They're all quite... I think Beef's definitely my favourite character. Out of the lot, the Phantom has this great electronic kind of Darth Vader voice, which is kind of, you know, which is pretty cool, and his design's really good. I do like the helmet and the metal teeth. You know, the reasons for the metal teeth are a bit weird, but the design itself looks good, and I've seen a few like cosplays of people doing it as well, and it works. It's kind of this kind of big leather getup and stuff and the big helmet. Let's talk a little bit about Swan, the record producer. So we find out later on that Swan has actually sold his soul to the devil for eternal youth, like Faust. That's probably why he likes the song so much. And he signs the Phantom, or Winslow, to a similar contract, and he can't get out of the contract. It's like I said, this is the satire. I think this is the satire thing of signing contracts of record deals and producers and things. So it's, you know, the record producer is obviously an evil man, you know, and signing contracts, signing your life away kind of thing. So it makes a lot of sense in that regard, the whole Faustian part of it. He's played by Paul Williams. Now, Paul Williams is... one of the only men who can say that he's written for The Carpenters, Kermit the Frog, and Barbara Streisand. He is one of the best kind of songwriters in the industry. I don't think he does that so much anymore, but he wrote Bugsy Malone, he wrote The Rainbow Connection for the Muppets movie, he wrote the songs for the... he wrote all the music for Muppets Christmas Carol, you name it. He was Little Enos in Smokey and the Bandit, another film. It's on the list, don't worry. He's quite... But I famously know him as the Penguin for the Batman animated series. He was amazing in that. I used to love it. And I do recommend the documentary, Paul Williams, Still Alive, which is basically a fan of Paul Williams basically went, where is he? What's happened to him? And it's basically about his struggle with drugs and alcohol in his life. And it's really interesting. It's really eye-opening. And it just shows kind of how talented that Paul Williams was. I mean, I've been listening to, I think there's a song, my favourite song, I don't know what that says about the film, but my favourite song was in the credits, but they never used it in the film. It was The Hell of It, and it's just a great track, and I've downloaded that recently, and I've been listening to that all day. But again, all the songs, I think, minus the Faust song is actually not that great. And it goes up, the opening song of Faust goes on for ages as well. I think they could have cut that down a lot, because it's just, I don't know, it was a bit like, here's me wanking off now, you know, here's my song, wanky, wanky, wank. I don't think it's that strong. So I kind of, part of me is like, oh, Swan, you want to open your club with this song? Open it with one of the better ones. Old Souls is really good. That's really good. That's sung by Jessica Harper, and it's a really good love song. So I highly recommend that as well. Now, you might not know this, but Brian De Palma directed this. This was actually Brian De Palma's first film. So the director of Carrie, Scarface, you know, various others. I highly recommend his film with John Travolta, Blowout, which is about a sound engineer who gets kind of caught up in a serial killer's murder spree. It's really fascinating, really, really good film. My friend Nathan Smith watched it the other day and he loved it. I've been telling him to watch it for years. So definitely look that one up. But yeah, so it doesn't feel like a Brian De Palma film. It does feel like he's kind of finding his feet a little bit. And it is very kind of standard. It doesn't have the quintessential Brian De Palma feel, that kind of, he's good with kind of sense of dread and things like that in films, especially Carrie and Scarface, that kind of building frustration and anger in Tony Montana that comes to a head at the end of the film. You know, he's really good at delivering that. So this one seems really kind of out of his wheelhouse. And I don't know if, I mean, he did write the film. I think him and Paul Williams wrote the music and the film kind of together and kind of worked it out that way. And I think they kind of just kind of squeezed the narrative in where they could and made sense of it. But it's definitely not a bad film. It's just not, doesn't feel like a Brian De Palma film. And I think that maybe, maybe if this was later on in his career, it would have a bit more kind of sinister nature, a sinister feel to it. But yeah, overall, the film is good. It's a very good film. I call it a secret score, not a secret bore. I give it like, I don't know, 4 Spideys out of 5. I've not come up with a decent rating system yet, so we'll go with one of those. I do recommend it. It's fun. The music, but again, I kind of see the film, but then probably buy the soundtrack, I'd say, or buy both. Yeah, please do buy both if you're going to watch it, unless it's on Netflix or something like that. But I don't think it is at the moment. You may be able to purchase it on YouTube or iTunes, things like that. Highly recommend that. Again, not a perfect film, but I still very much enjoyed it. And I'm just saying yes now. So on the whole, good. It was good. Yeah. So stop blathering and move on to the next segment.
Quiz all over me.
Quiz all over me is a dirty title because I'm a dirty, dirty boy. Basically, it's questions from the audience, from Twitter or Facebook or whoever. However you get your questions to me, send them and I'll sort them out and I'll try and fit them in as best I can, if I can, in the podcast. Okay, so let's see what the first one is. So this comes from the Shrieky Retro Nerds, which is, I think, just a Halloween-themed change to their name. They're normally known at their Twitter handle is at Geeky Retro Nerds. And they're asking my favourite movie and why. My favourite movie used to be Spider-Man 2 because it's amazing. But I kind of went off it after seeing it kind of too many times. It's still very good. I'm not kind of shitting all over it, but I got a bit fed up with it. And I actually started thinking about, if it wasn't Spider-Man 2, what would it be? And I came up with the answer of True Romance, which is a Quentin Tarantino written script. Tony Scott directed the movie, and it has got the best cast: Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Dennis Hopper, Christopher Walken, James Gandolfini. The list goes on. Brad Pitt in a small role. You know, it just is incredible. Gary Oldman is amazing in it. Samuel Jackson. It's incredible. Bronson Pinchot. Yeah, it's just such an amazing cast. And the story's great. It's about a geeky guy who likes cult movies and comic books and works in a comic book shop. And he meets the love of his life in the cinema. And they have this kind of whirlwind kind of love affair. You know, she's a sweet, lovely girl. And it turns out that she's a prostitute. And his boss paid for her to sleep with him, basically, and spend the night with him. And he could be very annoyed. Like, he could be really pissed off, rightly so. But he's had the best night of his life. He's fallen in love with this girl. It's Clarence and Alabama. And he just, they get married, like, the next day. So it's like this whirlwind romance. And then he doesn't want her to be a prostitute anymore. Again, fair enough. I get that. And he goes to see her pimp, played by Gary Oldman, and basically ends up killing him and accidentally taking a shit ton of cocaine. And that's where the adventure starts. And I don't want to spoil it because it's an amazing movie. I love it. And it speaks to me, obviously. It, you know, ticks all the boxes for me. I'm a cult film fan. I like comic books. And, you know, and I'm a hopeless romantic. It is a romantic film. It's not an ironic title. It's a beautiful love story and violent, gruesome. But you love these characters, and everyone's in it. You love the actors in it because it's all the greatest actors ever, all in this one movie. And you know, just that scene with Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken. Say no more. So thank you for that, Shrieky Retro Nerds. So next question. This is from one of my biggest supporters and biggest helps with me producing this podcast. This is from Jack and the Geekstalk. Or at Jack Geekstalk, and they're asking for my favorite. They're asking three questions. Cheeky, you cheeky guys. So they're asking my best Spider-Man comic book storyline, which I would say is Kraven's Last Hunt. It is a dark, twisted investigation into the mind of a supervillain. It's by J.M. DeMatteis, who is great, and I've chatted on him on Twitter a couple of times. He's a cool guy, and he really gets into the psychology of villains. There's a great Batman story he wrote about the Joker called Going Sane, and the Joker kills off Batman seemingly, and then he's like, right, time to start my normal life, and basically has a normal life for a bit. But I would say Kraven, but it's not really that much about Spider-Man, I will say that. But so I'll suggest the Master Planner saga, which is probably the first kind of Spider-Man epic, and really kind of nailed that kind of Spider-Man epic story, multi-part storyline. Peter gives Aunt May a blood transfusion to save her life, but he doesn't realize that his radioactive blood is going to kill her. And there's this antidote, the miraculous antidote, that he has to find. However, the Master Planner, this new criminal, has stolen it for, you know, devious reasons. So he has to basically run a gauntlet, an absolute gauntlet. There's an amazing scene. I won't spoil the whole thing, but there's an amazing scene when he's had his kind of final battle, and he's exhausted, he's tired, he's almost drowned. And he's coming up, and all these henchmen come at him, and he realizes he's so tired that it's easier to take all the punches and just swing his arms like a madman than actually try and fight it properly. It's better to just be hit and save his energy, which I thought was kind of heartbreaking, really sad. But it's an amazing story. I can't remember the issue numbers. I want to say like Amazing Spider-Man 20-something. Just look up Master Planner Saga, and that'll put you right. Greatest live-action superhero performance. It's a toughie. That is a toughie. I'm going to go with something out of the left field. I'm going to go Deadpool, because I truly think Ryan Reynolds was born to play that role. And then I'm going also for the next question is also going to be a Ryan Reynolds answer. Worst superhero costume has to be Green Lantern. Just dreadful. The mask was awful. CG was bad. Just make a suit, man. Just don't CG that stuff. All right. Thanks, Jack and the Geekstalk. Now, one of my favorite podcasts asking us questions here. Us, just me. Nobody else is in this room. It's just me. Maybe I'm turning into Venom. Venom. We are Venom. So Nerds Chatting are asking they were asking a comic book question, basically, which is good. I know that stuff. Do Marvel and DC comics no longer have the best content? Is that now Image Comics? Well, I love comic books. But I love superhero comics a lot, Marvel and DC. But most of my favorite comics aren't superhero comics, and they're not necessarily by... My top two comics are by DC Vertigo. So that's Why the Last Man and Preacher. They're both amazing and got really nothing to do with superheroes, really, in any regard. And I do like a lot of the Image stuff. Maybe not, I think, because I think Image, I think Spawn, I think Savage Dragon, I think all those early 90s ones. But I think Image now is more like Nerds Chatting are a fan of Invincible and Walking Dead, things like that. I think I need to delve into Image a bit more to find out, really, in regards to which ones. But I imagine maybe, yeah, because superheroes do get a bit stale. You know, I sometimes get bored of DC and Marvel myself. I'm like, oh, just give me something different. And, you know, I do like some of the more independent comics or, you know, different, you know, kind of properties. I've been really enjoying Transformers. Like Transformers from IDW, it's amazing. I couldn't recommend that. More Than Meets the Eye, it's called, the comic. I couldn't recommend that more than enough. It's wonderful. It's got, you know, LGBT Transformers, you know, transgender Transformers. You know, it's brilliant. It's so good. Some of the best kind of love stories and humor I've read in a comic in a long time. Thank you, Nerds Chatting. That's at Nerds Chatting on Twitter. Next one, another one of my favorite podcasts, We Have a Hulk podcast. So that's at We Have a Hulk pod. So their question is, what do you think of the latest suit from Spider-Man Far From Home that's been revealed? So that is kind of, if you don't know what it looks like, it's kind of this red and black number. And I love it. I think it's great. Red and black are my two favorite colors. So instant win for me. It's got, definitely got a kind of a Miles Morales look to it, or... I think I was saying on Twitter that there was an original Alex Ross, who's an amazing artist. He designed a possible suit for the Spider-Man movie, the Tobey Maguire Sam Raimi one, that didn't end up being used, but it was in the video game, the Spider-Man movie video game. And it's really good, and it looks a bit like that as well. So, no, I'm really happy with it, and I hope Mysterio looks as good. Next tweet, so from Spookus, or at the Marco guy, he asks, what's your favorite superhero cartoon? Now, there's some great ones in the 90s, I have to admit, and Spectacular Spider-Man is very high on the list. I was a big Batman fan, a big Spider-Man fan in the 90s, and I kind of dabble in the other ones as well a bit. But I have to say, the initial one I got into, the one that kind of started the whole thing for me, this whole kind of comic book fandom, had to be... was the X-Men, and you know, taught me about, you know, diversity and you know, tolerance at a very young age, which was very good, and kind of, and then Spider-Man taught me about responsibility as well. So yeah, great, loved it, and made me start reading comics. First comic I ever read was part of the Executioner's Song, which is a really cool X-Men crossover. So that led me to my love of comics, you know, from that basically that cartoon. And I love it. It's still good, still holds up today. I watch it every now and again. Love it. Just couldn't get enough of it. Okay, so the next, thank you for that, Spookus, or at the Marco guy. The next one is from my friend Daniel Keatis, who was my partner in the Nerdify. He was the head of Nerdify, and I used to be there with him. Be there. I just sat in the corner, quiet. No, I was the one mostly talking, probably too much, even now. So DL, that's DL Keatis, or at DL Keatis, says, who is your least favourite Marvel or DC superhero? Marvel and DC. So Marvel would have to be Thanos' brother, Star Fox, who has the power to emotionally manipulate people. And he's a bit of a Lothario. And it's a bit creepy having you know, manipulative emotional powers, much like the Purple Man. I think it's, you know, I think for a woman, like Spider-Woman has the same powers, it's not so bad. But for a male who's also like called Eros, his name Eros, or, you know, the god of love, I don't really like that idea. You know, pleasuring people via their brains and weird stuff. And he's just not very good character. He's not got much depth. I know there's been a comic recently where they're delving into Star Fox's character a bit more, but he's just always smiley and happy. Nothing ever seems to go bad for him. He's got this horrible, just constant grin. I'm just like, I just hate you because you just, I just, yeah, just don't like him. DC superhero, who do I not like? Guardian? I'm not sure. I'm just trying to think who I really don't like. Probably one of those early 90s rubbish ones. So like, I don't know. No, I like him. I like Booster Gold. I like Guy Gardner. Who don't I like? I'm sure someone will come to me. But I'll have a think. I'll have a think, Dan. Maybe I'll answer that next time. I don't know. But yeah, Star Fox, I absolutely hate. Just plain hate Star Fox. I probably, because I'm a bit more familiar with Marvel, so it's probably harder for me to think about DC characters. Okay, so thank you, Dan. Thank you for that question. So moving on to the next one. This is the 20th Century Geek Pod. So that's there at 20th Century Geek. That's 20th Century Geek on Twitter. If you had the opportunity to have editorial control of one character for a year, who would it be and what would you want to do? So I am a big fan of one of my favorite DC characters, a very unconventional one, is Deadman, who's basically a trapeze artist who gets shot and a Hindu god resurrects him and gives him the power to possess bodies and tells him to basically right wrongs and do the karmic balance thing. And he's this character called Boston Brand. I love him. He's a complete dick. Like, he was a horrible human being while he was alive. So the fact that he's dead kind of is really interesting. And he's one of these characters, most characters are very punchy. You know, I think Joss Whedon said that about the first Avengers film. They all kind of just had punchy powers. And he can't really punch unless he's in somebody's body. What I would do is I would take that character, I'd do like a partial reboot, I guess you could call it. So I would kill off Ramakrishna, who is the Hindu god, the fictional Hindu god that resurrects Deadman, Boston Brand, kill her off. And then I would have Deadman meet up with a detective who can see and hear ghosts. If you've played the video game Soul Suspect, you kind of have to, you're a detective who dies, and it's kind of a noirish kind of thing where you solve your own murder, but then you're also helping other ghosts kind of move on to the next plane of existence, you know, or heaven or hell or wherever. You're kind of their unfinished business. You're basically doing that for them. So I would do kind of that with Deadman, I think, and I would have Deadman, like, he's not trying to solve his own murder, I don't think, because I think that'd be a good thing as well, but I think maybe try this, because it kind of, I like noir detective stories. I think Deadman would work in that kind of supernatural detective stories. I mean, they're all over the TV now, there's so many of those things like Grimm and stuff like that. It's called, the video game is called Soul Suspect, if you want to have that. It's an okay game, it's okay. So I would do that, and he would be it's kind of Soul Suspect. It's also the film Ghost. So you'd have the detective would be the Whoopi Goldberg character who can hear and sense them. And basically I would have Deadman at odds with the detective. The detective wants to solve these ghosts are coming in and they're trying to, and he wants to solve other cases as well, normal cases probably, you would think, to make a living. Boston Brand needs Ramakrishna. I'd say like Deadman's withering away or something because Ramakrishna's not there. So he's getting more and more kind of corpse-like and emaciated and stuff. Like, he's not as kind of superheroic as he usually looks. And he's forcing this detective to, I'd probably make it a detective that already exists in the DC pantheon, maybe like Doctor 13 or something like that. And I would basically have them solve other ghosts, you know, unfinished business, all the while trying to solve who killed this Hindu god and how did they kill a Hindu god and what happened. I'd probably do that, or at least start that series, give it a good kind of head start and kind of let that story continue on if it kept going. So thank you very much to the 20th Century Geek Pod for that. So next one is Film Me Up 2 Reviews. So that's at Film Me Up 2. And they've asked, once I've asked a couple of times,
So, surprisingly good or bad movies of the year so far.
I really like Venom, guys. Sorry. I can see the flaws in it. I can see its problems. But I was entertained. I was laughing all the way through. It was fun. Had elements. He looked like Venom. He acted like Venom. You know, there's a few odd choices. And, you know, but I think they did a good job excommunicating Spider-Man from it and not making it dull or uninteresting. I think the performances are very strong. Tom Hardy and Michelle Williams, not so much everybody else, but they really took me through that film and I enjoyed it. I know a lot of people won't agree with me. Dozens, I'm sure. So this next question, we are Venom. This next question is from Dan Tween or Dan Burden. At Dan Burden 1138. Sorry, that's at Dan Burden 1138. So he's asking multiple questions as well. So does Pineapple belong in pizza? Short answer, no. Who has been the best Batman and would be your ideal casting? Best Batman, Michael Keaton. Ideal casting, John Hamm. Pick one comic book that's never been adapted into a movie. Samurais versus Dinosaurs. It's in the title. That's all you need to know. I would love to see that because that kind of marries the two things I like. Sounds like a cult film and, you know, and it could be fun. Could be fun. Comic book. Okay, next question. I am JACs and JACS, regular, irregular. Okay. So JACs is asking, that's at JIMJACs musings is the Twitter handle. And it says, if the MCU was set to evolve in post phase three, as predicted, who would be your actor picks for a reincarnated Fantastic Four and X-Men? So I'm not going to go into the X-Men because that'll just take too long and I'd want to name absolutely everybody. But my Fantastic Four would be Michael Sheen as Mr. Fantastic Reed Richards, Ron Perlman as Ben Grimm, the Thing, Emily Blunt as the Invisible Woman, Sue Storm or Susan Richards, and Steven Yeun of Walking Dead fame as the Human Torch. So I would go with Emily Blunt and Steven Yeun, their brothers. So I'd have the, like they did in the Fan Full Stick, which was bloody awful. I would have them be, Steven Yeun be adopted or Emily Blunt be adopted, either way. I think Ron Perlman would be great if it was a suit or if it was CGI or a bit of both. And I think Michael Sheen is old enough to play Reed Richards, like a decent age, not too old. And I think he would make, I think he's very, it would seem very intelligent, very verbose. I think that would be pretty perfect Fantastic Four for me. Okay, so next bit is basically... Next question. I mean, what am I on about? Losing the plot here. Daniel Reeves at Cornish Sun 73. If you could go back through time and stop one superhero or villain being created, who would it be and why? I've been reading the Joe Kelly run on Daredevil, which is actually pretty good. But I would... there's a villain. No, sorry, it's not Joe Kelly. I tell a lie. Scott Lobdell. At the end of the first volume of Daredevil, they had a storyline, and he introduced a character called Le Concierge, who is basically a French supervillain who looks like the Tarantula, another Spider-Man villain. And it's not like you know, everyone knows what a concierge is, but it's not funny. It's not like they don't make a joke about it. It's just called Le Concierge. It's not humorous. It's just like, I'm a villain called the Concierge. And it's just rubbish. That's the one that comes to mind at the moment because it was just, they didn't do anything with it. Like if he was dressed like a waiter or like a bellboy or fucking something, but they didn't. They didn't do that. Another one of my favourite Twitterers of the Twitterati is at Geeky Nerd at one. No, sorry, Geeky Nerd. Need to separate these. Geeky Nerd at one Geeky Nerd. And she asks, Halloween or Christmas and why? So I'm basically going to go for Christmas because I love Halloween. Don't get me wrong, but I often don't really do anything for it. It's probably my fault for not organising or doing things. But I always make room for Christmas. I always organise to go and see my family. I do love my family, and I don't see them as much as I probably should. So I would say definitely this as definitely Christmas. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Christmas, and don't worry, I've got something for you. So in regards to that, I'm coming up. That's all the questions. So thank you very much for the first. That was the first edition of Quiz All Over Me. Spider Dan
and his amazing friends.
Okay, so this is basically
The segment where I promote my friends' businesses or what my friends are up to, sort of events or shows, anything like that. So if you want me to promote, or so I can send you the snippet as well. I don't have to send you the whole podcast. I'll send you the snippet of me promoting your things. Please do. And I'll do that for you. Right now, I'm just going to thank my inspirations for me doing this podcast. So first of all, Kevin Smith. Great podcaster, filmmaker, love him so much, so funny. All the free funny that I get, he's brilliant. Ralph Garman, who's a regular partner with Kevin Smith. Chris Jericho, the wrestler turned rocker turned podcaster. And the guys from Nerdify, so Josh and Dan. I really enjoyed all the podcasts that we do. And, you know, I'm sad we don't do it, but I understand why we don't do it anymore. I'll definitely have you guys on as guests. Who else? So recently I've been doing podcasts with my friend Dan and Howard, and the podcast called And Now the Podcast Starts, which is reference to And Now the Screaming Starts, which is an amicus horror film. They're very much into Hammer horror and things like that. So they're going to be sending out kind of new editions on YouTube, I believe. I think they're called Ambidextrous Limited or Productions or something. So they basically, we've been talking about the Halloween franchise. So you can hear me wax lyrical on Michael Myers or The Shape, however you want to call him. But yeah, who else? Guys, you've been so good on Twitter supporting me, and everybody who's like me on Facebook as well. Jack and the Geekstalk, We Have a Hulk, Nerds Chatting, Skip to the End, the list goes on. You know, all the guys that have tweeted me with questions as well. My brain's been a bit crap today, so I do apologize. everybody who's on Twitter, everybody who follows me, everybody there, if I've not mentioned you, I do apologize. They're just the names that are coming to my head right now. Yeah, it's been fun. This has been great. I think I was a bit tentative to begin with, you know, but I feel like I'm finding my feet here. I think I'll grow in confidence, and I think this will be turning into a really, really good show. I hope you've enjoyed this week. Next week, I'm going to start my season. I'm going to try and do weekly podcasts now for the next 2 months. Now, Christmas is coming up, and we always seem to celebrate it November, which boggles the mind. I'm not a bar humbug kind of guy, but I kind of think, you know, wait till December at least. But since everybody else is celebrating it, I'm going to celebrate it my own way. So I don't mind Christmas movies, but I don't tend to like, they don't get my juices flowing like regular movies do. You know, it can be a bit schmaltzy and a bit, you know, like ho-hum, you know. I get people that like the kind of feeling and the warmth and the family vibe, but I like that as well, but I don't like it kind of force-fed me, and it's always the same damn movies on every year. You know, it's always Home Alone, it's always, you know, things like that, and I'm just like, oh. And you know, like Die Hard is great because it's an alternative Christmas movie, and that's exactly what I'm going to do this year. I'm going to do alternative movies. So these are movies that are set around Christmas or have a Christmas vibe to them, or you know, they could be New Year's movies, they could be, you know, they're unconventional, non-traditional alternative Christmas movies, and I'm going to call this hashtag my alternativity story. So that's hashtag alternativity story. I sent out Twitter. I sent out to the Twitterati a choice of two films with two spooky Santas in that I'm going to review. Two foreign language movies. I think one's from Sweden. I think one was Dutch, I believe. I'm not sure. I'd have to double check. But one of them was Sint or Saint, and the other one was Rare Exports. And Rare Exports won. So I'm very much looking forward to watching that and starting this whole new season. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Thank you again for joining me today. It's been great. Probably have to edit this down a little bit. I think I've talked over my allotted time. So I might have to cut a segment. But yeah, it's been great. Thank you very much for joining me today. It's been a great one. And remember to join the Pratalion, hashtag join the Pratalion online, because this is Prattle World. Okay, I'll see you next week. Bye-bye, guys. Good for nothing, bad in bed. Nobody likes you and you're better off dead. Goodbye, goodbye. We've all come to say goodbye, 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 goodbye. Goodbye.